You're listening to Orange County's only station with critical business information, Critical Mass, with your host, Rick Franzi.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host. I host this business talk show, which airs live on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday afternoons. On Tuesdays and Wednesdays, it's on at 4 p.m. And on Thursdays, we're streaming to you live at 3 o'clock because my partner Doug Gefeller is doing his show, Critical Mass, the Coaching Perspective, at 4 o'clock. Say, if you're listening to this show as a podcast, hey, that's great. But I would encourage you to occasionally listen to the show live during our broadcast times. You can find the show live at www.octalkradio.net. The goal for this show is to help you, our listening decisions. How do we do that, you ask? We do that by interviewing thought leaders and peer executives who have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences. I would like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you're interested in learning more about Smart Business Magazine, which is a national publication with 19 regional journals, then visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. When you reach their homepage, if you're interested in their information about Orange County, that is one of their local journals, find the Orange County section, click that, and it'll take you to their Orange County information. Critical Mass, the radio show, is an extension of our 17-year consulting practice. One of the things that we do is we build CEO peer groups for executives in Orange County, California. We do this in partnership with Renaissance Executive Forums. Executive Forums is an international organization committed to helping members take their business to the next level. My partner, Doug Gefeller, and I currently chair multiple CEO peer groups. Doug is a master certified coach, which is a distinction achieved by less than 900 certified coaches in the world. And Doug is our lead partner in charge of our coaching practice. Doug hosts, as I said earlier, a talk show right here on octalkradio.net. It's called The Coaching Perspective. It is on Thursdays at 4 p.m. My book, Critical Mass, The 10 Explosive Powers of CEO Peer Groups, was the first book ever written on the subject of peer groups and is available for sale at Amazon.com. You can find it simply by typing my name, Richard Franzi, F-R-A-N-Z-I. If you'd like to learn more about our CEO peer group business or our executive coaching practice, then check out www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. Say, if you're listening live and you would like to be a part of the radio show today, then you're obviously on the octalkradio.net website. Find the community chat room, log in, post your comments. My capable producer, Paul, will be checking those and possibly will include some of your comments and thoughts as a part of the radio program today. I'd like to turn our attention now to our first guest of two. The first guest here on Critical Mass, the radio show, is Dr. Fresh of his firm, Dr. Fresh. So, Dr. Fresh, welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick.
It's good to have you here. And let's start the interview by asking you if you could share with our audience briefly your background that sort of predates Dr. Fresh and where you are in your career today.
Rick, I am originally from New Delhi, India. And after doing my medical studies, I ended up starting my own business with my own brand called Dr. Fresh Toothbrushes. And my family was in manufacturing of toothbrushes on contract with major companies with famous brands. But I never wanted to be in contract manufacturing business. I decided to start off my own brand called Dr. Fresh. I launched my company initially in India, then in Russia. and from Russia. I came to the United States in 1998 and ended up, came up initially into New York, 99, came to Los Angeles. I've been here 11 years. Started practically from a scratch in New York as a single-man operation, first time in the U.S., and today we are over 100 people in the U.S. And doing a phenomenal business here, growing year on year, every year for the last 12 years in a row.
Well, I'm sure the audience is curious then. They're saying, okay, well, what is it that he has built now? So if you could share with them for a minute, what is the business that Dr. Fresh is in today?
Business of Dr. Fresh is mostly the toothbrushes, which includes manual toothbrushes and battery-operated toothbrushes. The real famous toothbrush of ours, which kind of brought us to the map in the United States, was a brush by the name of Firefly, which is a kid's toothbrush. It's a kid's light-up timer toothbrush. So it has a light in it that lights up for 1 minute when you press the button and teaches kids how long to brush. So it induces compliance amongst brushing within kids. And it became an instant hit after the launch amongst the dental community. And the dental community, the dentists, there are 7,000 of pediatric dentists in the U.S. and almost 6,000 out of the 7,000 recommend using Firefly, which is the currently the number one selling SKU in kids' toothbrushes in America. And apart from that, as we grew, we ended up licensing several brands like Barbie, Spider-Man, Hello Kitty, and we united the Firefly technology with those brands, and we came out with toothbrushes that light up that were Barbie or Hello Kitty or Spider-Man. As well as we also licensed brands like AIM, Pepsodent, and Close-Up, and we have several products like toothbrushes and mouthwash in those brands. Apart from that, we had an opportunity to buy a Banaca brand, which is a 120-year-old brand, world famous, and known by 80%+ of United States population. That company was under Chapter 11 proceedings, and we were able to buy the brand inexpensively, relatively, and we have been working on getting that back to the glory status days, and that is really doing very well, and we are hoping that within a year or two, Banaca would be back to its glory days.
You have quite a diversified business. I know in doing some research and in talking with you that Dr. Fresh owns more patents than any other U.S. oral care company.
Correct. Dr. Fresh, the business was incorporated on three major four major keystones. Number one amongst them is the innovation part of it. So I knew from day one that if I need to grow in this competitive economy where there are giants like Colgate and Procter & Gamble and GlaxoSmithKline and Johnson & Johnson, which are all over $10 billion companies each apart, I need to be very innovative. I almost need to be fighting a guerrilla war here. In that scenario, innovation was the number one key point. We have a constant, even till date, over 20% of the company's resources are put in research and development, which is unusual for a consumer packaged product company. It almost is equal to a medical product company or a pharmaceutical company. Then apart from that, the other very important thing that I learned very quickly was that I need to utilize my production capabilities that I knew from my family business of manufacturing toothbrushes. I needed to manufacture a very good quality toothbrush that was equivalent to anything else in the market from one of the major CPG companies, and I need to produce it at extremely low price. So very low price, very high quality, and great innovation were the three major pillars, and the fourth pillar that kind of I learned very quickly that if I need to be successful, I need to really add on that to it is licensing. So I knew that to be a brand name is your key to get to market your product much faster than rather than building your own brand, which takes years and years. So instead of waiting and trying to build my own brand one by one, which I did, though, by building Firefly, in the meanwhile, I licensed several other brands which were already popular, paid them the royalties, and I've been able to successfully launch several brands, including Hello Kitty and Barbie and AIM, Pepsodent, Close Up. All these brands are licensed brands that I carry.
So that leads me to the next question, Dr. Fretch, which is of all the things that you've learned in your business career, could you share with our audience what is your guiding principle for how you're leading and growing Dr. Fretch, the business?
Lean and mean company. You have to be, we're very productive per person. We're very nimble. We are very quick to react. Most of the big organizations, the reason they... the only reason we kind of have an edge over them is they are very slow to react, although that's necessarily not a bad thing in larger picture, but our way to survive is we react very fast. If a retailer who's at the end of the day a human being wants something, for me to manufacture that particular thing in record time is very important. Because the big guys can't do it, and that's what the retailer is looking for. So I have an immediate edge over a major guy like Procter & Gamble or Colgate, just because by the time the retailer thinks and reacts, CPG companies, the major CPG companies would think and react, I would probably produce the product in the same time. Get it to their stores, and that's what makes retailers extremely happy with me. And that's what has really helped me create an edge over the major CPG companies.
And I'm going to come back to that in a couple questions later in an interview, because I want to delve a little more deeply into your innovation and your agility in the market, because I really think your firm exemplifies much of what I talk about, successful growth strategies for mid-market companies. So I'm going to hold that, though, just for a little bit, because I'd like to sort of turn you in a different direction and ask you if you would be comfortable sharing with our audience a current challenge that you're facing inside your business or external to your business, and sort of what you're doing about that challenge and to mitigate it from affecting your business.
Very interesting. And smart question. I believe the number one challenge today with Dr. Fresh Inc. is the growing power of China. It's not a challenge for Dr. Fresh. It's probably, I'm sure, a challenge for a lot of people who are in mid-market like me, whose destinies are controlled by imports from China. And currently, there is almost a four-pronged thing going on in China. Number one, there is a major labor revolution going on in China. So the prices of labor in China have grown between 20 to 80% in last 6 months alone, and depending upon which part of China the factory is situated. And inflation is on a rise. There is so much pressure within Chinese government to increase the wages of the workers, to give them better health insurance, to provide old age compensation, etc. for them, that it is becoming very challenging for them to keep a major uprising from happening, lest they wouldn't force the factories to raise the prices. Secondly, because of this labor price increase, there is an overall price increase going on for manufactured products in China. And today, over 70% of my production is done in China, and about 25% of my production is done in the United States. And for me, it's very challenging. The second reason what is going on in China is there is a huge pressure on China to increase the price of yuan, especially from the U.S. government and from all over the world, from EU and from other parts of the developed nations. And because of that, there is already a 6% increase in the yuan prices versus U.S. dollar. To really put it bluntly, actually, rather than me saying pressure from U.S., the real pressure is from U.S. itself, because U.S. itself is printing too much paper money. And because of that, there is a flood of currency around the globe, and other currencies have to appreciate in order to compensate it. So practically, U.S. is trying to depreciate their currency or keep their currency at a low price, versus other currencies are trying to do the same. And in this tug of war, what is ending up happening is, although slowly there is an increase in the currency price of yuan, which is about 6% in the last 6 months, and which is projected to be 1% per month for next 5 years. And this is the projection given by several major economists around the globe. So if that keeps on happening, you're looking at 10 to 12% increase in prices every year, not because the prices have increased, just because the yuan has appreciated against the dollar. So for a company like mine, where a lot of production is coming from China and cost is very important, I've already seen 6%, for example, growth in yuan price, another 5 to 6% growth in prices because of the labor price increase in China, another 5% growth because of the price of oil going up, because there's a huge increase in price of oil from 60, 70 bucks back to $100 a barrel. Just because of that price increase, my cost of logistics, bringing the product from China to Los Angeles, and also the cost of plastic, which is the major raw material for toothbrushes, has increased. So it has trickled or added up to being another 5% cost. So in total, my cost price have increased. The cost to manufacture goods have gone up by about 15%. And my sales are mostly to discounters or to dollar stores like Dollar Tree or 99 cents, which have a fixed price point of retail. So I don't blame them, because they can't keep on increasing my price, because they have to retail the product for X amount of price. And since my cost is going up, I have to in order to sustain myself and survive, I have to increase the price. So in this whole tug of war, it is becoming very challenging to keep production back in China. And to move the entire production somewhere else, I don't think there is any other country ready to do so. So that is a major challenge to my business, to put it frankly.
And if I could ask you, what steps are you taking then to address that challenge?
Again, this is what I'm doing, and thank you for asking me. I am actually... I went to Vietnam initially to see if I could transfer some of the manufacturing into Vietnam. I went to India, and I'm from India originally, and I went to Turkey. I have explored Mexico, but believe me or not, U.S. is the number one place in the world today to take the spot for manufacturing back. So I am actually increasing manufacturing back in the United States. I've ordered several new machines in the past few months. There is a scheme, thankfully, by Obama, which a lot of people may not know, where Obama government is giving you 100% appreciation on any machine that you buy up to $500,000 in year 2010 and 2011. And that is to help people like me, who are small manufacturers, to go back into manufacturing, and that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm actually importing or putting or buying locally a lot of machinery that can help me get back into manufacturing on a much larger scale. So that would help mitigate quite a bit of problems that I'm having with China once I have at least 50%+ of my goods manufactured in the U.S., I think I'll be in a much better situation than today. And that's my aim.
Well, I am fascinated by your answer, and it will certainly, this interview, once we turn it into an MP3 archive, is one that I'm going to be strongly suggesting others listen to, because what you said about bringing your manufacturing back to the U.S. Is sort of counterintuitive, I think, for many mid-market business owners and CEOs out there, and you've explained it with such precision. I would like them to listen to it, because it's certainly more credible coming from you as a peer business owner than coming from me as someone who's retelling your story. So thank you for sharing that.
I'm being honest.
And it's very instructional. And thank you for bringing up the 100% depreciation on capital equipment, because that is, I always look for learning moments in the radio show, and clearly that is an opportunity for others in the audience who may not have been aware this administration is trying to help mid-market companies. That's certainly an example of an attempt to create demand that also then may help with the manufacturing base, which has been eroding in this country for quite a number of years. Okay. You know, I'd like to bring you back to what you were saying earlier as well, because I am fascinated and interested in studying the steps that successful mid-market companies, and I define mid-market as 5 million to 100 million, 5 million to 100 million mid-market companies, the strategies that they use to successfully compete against much larger companies, giants, if you will, in their industry. And you certainly in the consumer products sector have some really large companies who are trained in on a similar market space, at least one would see from the outside. So could you take us back to talking about the successful things that you have been doing and continue to do with Dr. Fresh Inc. to get the kind of results that you've gotten in your business?
Yes, as I said that I have relied on my competencies of being extremely nimble in thought and organization. And I have actually a policy of yes or no in my company. I have a little postcard of yes and no posted on pretty much every table of every person in my company. And I tell them the biggest mistake that they can do is not say yes or no. I do not want a maybe from anybody at any time. So I want everybody to be very decisive. And I'd rather have a no, or I'd rather have a wrong answer than have no answer. So that's kind of been my policy within the company, and that's what I've been propagating. And secondly, I think to be worthy of trust and belief in whatever you do is very important. So I've tried to maintain that principle. We're very creative here. We do a lot of innovation, as I told you. We keep our cost of manufacturing to the lowest, and we create value, and we promote giving value to the consumer at the end of the day. Apart from that, as I said, it's innovation, value delivery, and licensing. Means either you market your product really well, or you license something that already is existing or is known. Is the three things, and the fourth thing is getting the right innovative product at the right value, with the right license to the customer quickly, and getting to the customer as fast as you can with the right product that they need. I'm kind of probably circling on the same things. I don't know. Maybe I'm not getting your question exactly. Is there something else that you wanted to know?
No, you're reinforcing a consistent message about how you've approached growing your business and building it, which I think mirrors very well and aligns very well to what my research is showing that the best performing mid-market companies do. You exemplify, there are four common strategies, and in our conversations and my research on your firm and listening to you again here today, you articulate those elements of those four strategies so well that when I publish the book in the fall of this year, I'd like to have you as one of my baseline companies, and we can talk about this later. I'd like to feature your company in my book because I do think you are a great representative of what successful mid-market companies can do to grow their revenue and protect their profit and enhance their profit in many cases. So thank you for your answers.
Thank you.
Okay. If someone would like to learn more about the Dr. Fresh brand and Dr. Fresh, the founder, I mean, how would they find out more about you and your organization?
I think Google. Anything you want to know today, I just go to Google. I'm a big fan of Google. But drfresh.com, which is drfresh.com, is our website. And then banaka.com is for Banaka, fireflytoothbrush.com for Firefly. Dr. Fresh Dental for dental offices, but that's the best way to know about Dr. Fresh. And if somebody has one particular question that they need to ask, maybe they should just email it to one of the persons within the office. You can email it natalie@drfresh.com if there is any specific question that you need to know, and we'll see if we can get it answered. If it's not like thousands of them coming, then we can get them answered as quickly as we can.
Well, I appreciate the time that you spent with us, the time that you spent thinking about, you know, kind of the answers and how you wanted to talk on the show today. I would like to welcome you to the Critical Mass for Business community. And thank you, Dr. Fresh, for being a friend of Critical Mass, the radio show.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick, and thank you for having me on the show.
It was my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. You know, Doug and I believe that business owners and executives learn best from the experiences of their peers. I think you would agree and believe that the interview that I just conducted with Dr. Fresh and his experiences can help you simply from listening to where he is and the things that he's done. You know, this happens every month in the CEO peer groups that Doug and I facilitate in Orange County. The opportunity to be in the same room with nine other top executives, many of whom own their own business, can have a significant positive impact on the decisions that you as a member would make. You know, just because you're in business for yourself does not mean you have to be in business by yourself. We're going to come back after this with our second guest, who is Bob Lauder of eAgency. We've got quite a number of things to talk about with Bob. But first, let's step away for this sponsorship moment.
Smart Business Network is a business-to-business multimedia company providing insight, advice, and strategy for C-level executives of fast growth, middle market, and large companies. As one of the nation's largest publishers of local management journals, under the Smart Business name, Smart Business Network publishes 19 regional print editions, presents dozens of large and small-scale business conferences and award programs, and produces a vibrant interactive digital media presence. For more information, visit us at www.sbnonline.com.
Welcome. Critical Mass, the radio show. I'm your host, Rick Franzi. If you would like to join the conversation during the show, if you're listening live, go to the chat room at octalkradio.net, post your thoughts. My producer, Paul, will check them and possibly we'll bring them on to our show. I'd like to bring on my second guest, Bob Lauder of eAgency. Welcome to Critical Mass, the radio show, Bob.
Thanks, Ron. I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Great. Well, let's get started with your first question, which is, can you talk to our audience about your professional experience that predates eAgency?
Absolutely. Essentially, you know, when I got out of school, I went into the military. And so I spent about 9 years in the nuclear branch of the U.S. military in kind of remote locations. And I think that's was key to building what I like to tell people, the ethic for hard work and lots of responsibility, along with the ability to handle stress. Mm-hmm. And after 9 years of the military, though I did love the military, I decided to go off and be my own business person. And so really, since then, I have been involved in a number of startups and different kinds of companies and kind of how I got to where I am today.
And so tell me, what was the inspiration for e-agency, and what is e-agency?
Well, it's interesting because the agency has morphed really into a company that's different than what it was originally envisioned. But essentially, you know, I was always an early adopter of technology. I was one of those geeky guys that when there weren't computers, I built one. So I had a PC before my friends did. And as I built some of my businesses, I wanted to use technology to better compete in the marketplace. I wanted to, learn to leverage these tools to expand my businesses. And so at one point, many years ago when I first started one of my financial service companies, I had, several thousand salespeople working for us nationwide. And there really wasn't an adequate Salesforce or CRM application that was suited well for such a mobile enterprise. And so I formed eAgency to spin off some technology that we had built that was, in fact, so good and working so well for our company that other people wanted to buy it from us. And so originally eAgency was designed to develop Salesforce automation and CRM tools for mobile field forces. And so we were mobilizing on some very old mobile devices that today you probably wouldn't call them mobile because they didn't have cell connections. But, you know, we were early in the mobile space, and that's how it got started.
Okay. And where have you moved the company to today?
Well, today, really, you know, when you look at the fact that we were probably one of the first companies in the country to develop applications for mobile devices. We were developing applications for the BlackBerry platform when BlackBerry was still a pager. We were the first ones to provide calendar sync and contact sync on a BlackBerry and so forth. And really what happened was is as we got more and more involved and more sophisticated in these mobile platforms, we stumbled upon some opportunities to do something, that would be even more beneficial in a broader way, and that is security. And I know we'll probably talk more about this. We get into some of our products, but we've really morphed into a mobile security company with products that suit personal, enterprise, as well as government and public safety.
You know, later in the interview, and not too long, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get there. What we're going to talk about relative to mobile security and handheld devices, smartphones, I find it quite intriguing. And frankly, Bob, before you and I met and we started talking about this and preparing you and preparing me for your appearance, I really hadn't given it much thought as I do today. So I think we have a real learning moment here, ladies and gentlemen. But before we get there, could you discuss, of all the business experiences that you had, kind of a key lesson that you've learned through that experience, you know, what is your guiding principle as it is today as the leader of eAgency?
Well, I actually appreciate that you asked that question because it's not a question that often, you know, people ask you when they perceive, you know, that maybe you've had a measure of success. But for me personally, always being in positions of stress, which all entrepreneurs are, by the way. Of course, to some degree, we thrive on that. But my guiding principle and the things that allowed me to, I think, front up to the obstacles, to put it probably bluntly, was really this one concept. And it was, I made a promise to myself that I would never do anything just for money. So I had to have, along with the goal of being, let's see, successful or wealthy, was that everything I had to have some meaningful purpose. And I'm not saying save the world, but it had to have purpose that couldn't just be a money game, and that was it. And that's really helped me, I think, deal with some of the difficulties that I've gone through life trying to build businesses and so forth.
that you reflected on that question, Bob, and you see the significance of it. It's obvious in the way you answered that question. And we've been asking this question since, well, almost since we started the show. Doug and I are publishing a book in March, which is selected extracts of interviews that we did in the first year of the show of guests that answered that question, because we found such a richness in the answers that the guests gave us that we thought it was so compelling that we're turning it into a book. And frankly, we plan on writing a book next year as well with a selected excerpts from this year's interviews. So I thank you for sharing your guiding principle with our audience today.
Well, I would think that the entrepreneur is probably a good source of that kind of information, certainly because they have to have some kind of principle to confront and deal with the difficulties of starting and growing a business from scratch.
Yeah, and it never, as you know, it seems to be a challenge all the way through. Even once you achieve some level of revenue success and stability in a business, there, life gives you a whole other set of opportunities to test your guiding principles. So it's a great opportunity to share as a business leader with other business leaders.
Absolutely.
I'd like to ask you now and come back to what we sort of teased in an earlier answer to a question, Bob, and that is, could you share with our audience, from your vantage point and your knowledge, the current risks, and I think increasing risks, of employees' smartphones, you know, both their personal smartphone and maybe a smartphone that's provided by the business, but, you know, what are the risks to that as it relates to mid-market companies and entrepreneurial companies and even larger companies from a security perspective?
Well, I'd love to answer that question, obviously, because I'm very passionate about it, and passion, I think, is another guiding principle for driving a business. You have to have passion. And so, you know, what I have to do to answer this question is kind of have people orient themselves to, you know, security problems on a PC. You know, so we're all used to, you know, things like spam. Maybe some kind of spam comes across you wouldn't want your wife and kids to see, you know. There's people that some of these spam emails come in and take over your mailbox and send spam to your friends, or maybe they steal your friend's address book. We're familiar with viruses. We're familiar with internet access and children using the computers to access the internet at home. And we've dealt with those issues, you know, with companies like Symantec and their company Norton for the home, and you know, all these various security firms that provide software, and we're all familiar with that idea. But what's happened in the last 5 years in particular is that there's been a huge and almost unprecedented convergence of some technologies that have changed the scope of this into what I call the perfect storm. And those technologies are the speed of wireless internet access, the powerful chips that are now put in these handheld devices. I mean, they're chips that's more powerful than the computers we had 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. And the advent of social networking. So when you take a smartphone, Android device or an iPhone or a BlackBerry or such, or even some of the premium phones, you have a voice recorder, which can be used to secretly record conversations in a boardroom, at a dinner meeting. You have a camera that can be used to take pictures of documents. Of course, we've all heard about, and we'll talk about more later, what the children use the cameras for. It has a video camera that can be used to capture sensitive or confidential information. It has internet access 24/7, regardless of where, for the most part, 98% of the metropolitan United States is covered. So whatever information could be borrowed, stolen, monitored, whatever, is instantaneously, within a fraction of a moment, can be sent anywhere in the world. Beyond that, we have, on all of our devices today, we have GPS capability. And we love it because we take our Android device and we push a little button and we say, directions to Starbucks. And lo and behold, within a matter of seconds, a list of all the Starbucks within the 5-mile radius of your location appear, and you select the one you want, and then you get driving directions, just like that. It's incredibly convenient. Now, in the process of having these wonderful features that we also use in social networking, like Facebook, we share with our friends that we're at the local Starbucks. Maybe one of our friends will show up. Maybe we just want to let our friends know that we're standing at the top of a mountain skiing on a beautiful day. So we take a picture, it's geolocated, and it's shared. Now, we know that companies like Facebook share this information with as many as hundreds of other entities whom you probably don't know. We also know that Google shares information. We know that most of the applications that people put on their phones share information. The interesting thing is they say we share this information anonymously, which is supposed to give people a level of comfort. So what? Somebody knows somebody was at a location. They don't know it's me. Well, this is where, when you really look at the truth of it, the reality is every night you take that phone home and Google says, oh, it just went to 1613 Smith Avenue in Fort Wayne, Indiana. You took it home the next night. Oh, and went back there again. Then the next day you got up and you took it to work, and it goes to work every day at a certain time, goes home at a certain time, goes to certain bars, it goes to certain restaurants. It's very easy from that database to derive who you are. And the information about who you are, where you shop, where you eat, you would be surprised how much is known about you. And that's why when you have a Facebook page, and like me, you're a pilot, and all you ever did was send a picture of a helicopter to a friend. I never put helicopter in my interest. And I'm getting helicopter training advertising ads because they know who I am, they know where I live, and they know I fly helicopters. So when you extend this privacy situation to the corporate world, what that means is somebody somewhere, as a matter of fact, hundreds of somebodies, are tracking your employees. They know when they're in the office. They can surmise when they're in a boardroom. They know who they are. So let's say you had an executive and this information about where the executive was on a certain day, and maybe there was a press release that on a certain day there was going to be a big board meeting. That's how much people know. Now, recently, you know, there was a case of a Google employee who was monitoring, I think it was 5 children. I don't know if you've remember that story. And was monitoring their communications back and forth via the Google network. Of course, they were all using Gmail. Got himself interjected into the discussion and eventually got fired. Because, of course, that kind of conduct is probably illegal, and I'm sure it's against Google's policy. The problem that we have is that every entity that has this information is not necessarily Google. They're not necessarily, we don't know who they're selling the information to. We don't know if the person that's buying this information is matching this data up against other databases out there, and we don't know what kind of background check was done on them when they bought the data. So, in my opinion, there's a huge opportunity for corporate espionage, the stealing of trade secrets, the stealing of vital confidential company information, and in fact, it is happening every day. And it is coming up, and it is biting corporations. So the other kinds of issues you can have that are security issues today that we probably didn't worry about 10 years ago is employees texting each other pictures, employees using company devices for sexual harassment. So there's different levels and different kinds of security risks. They all potentially affect the bottom line, and recently, one of these security problems made it all the way to the Supreme Court, and it had to do with an Ontario policeman using a company BlackBerry in an improper way. So these are threats that just didn't exist before. They were not so prevalent, and they weren't so frequent. And so these are just some ideas of the things that IT departments and security people need to start thinking about today.
So as these phones become more and more capable and have more and more characteristics that are can be used for good or not good, what is a mid-market CEO, what should they be doing or what should they be thinking about doing to sort of more than maybe you're doing today, Bob?
Well, typically IT managers are obsessed with security. And so, that's why you've seen a slow adoption of the iPhone and, let's say, the Android into the corporate world. We've mostly stuck with BlackBerries. And that's starting to change now. And the primary reason for that is that the BlackBerry platform is more secure. It has more tools. It's more locked down. However, recently, BlackBerry, like the other mobile platform providers, have created application stores. So any user on a BlackBerry can download an application, and that application could be a security risk that the company may not be able to control. So I guess the bottom line is that it's time for IT managers to become more versed in mobile technology, understanding what those security risks are. Simple thing like understanding that an app store on a BlackBerry is an extremely high security risk and shouldn't be allowed. The other thing that companies need to do is they need to review their company policies. What are the rules regarding using company devices for personal use? Why could that be a security problem for the company, and so forth? I'll just give you one example of that. Sarbanes-Oxley, most mid-market companies don't have to worry about this, but depending on the number of investors and the size of the company, it could be an issue. It could also be that if they ever want to be sold someday or merged or whatever, that they probably want to follow Sarbanes-Oxley. But Sarbanes-Oxley requires that the company, archive electronic communications. How most employees are getting around knowing that their emails are going to be archived, they text each other.
Right.
And so this is one of the security gaps. So I think the first thing that all companies do is try to assess their security risk, their security gap, and then start looking for technology solutions to help them, lock that down.
Okay, thank you. Bob, I'd like to ask you to share with our audience the work that you're doing in the time that we have left with a product which you call My Mobile Watchdog. Would you share that with our audience?
Sure,
please?
And I know we use a lot of time, so I'll try to be brief. But, the beginning of My Mobile Watchdog really came from being asked to help a law enforcement entity in California to solve a problem involving an 11-year-old child who met someone at a water park, a 29-year-old male, who exchanged cell phone numbers with the child and used the cell phone number to send illicit pictures and was training the child via text how to use the camera to send him pictures. They came to us frustrated because there really was no technology to help them capture this person, and it's very difficult, and we don't have time today to get into the reasons why it's difficult to get the information from companies, the telephone companies, and so forth. So that was the beginning. We developed an application for phones that could be used to protect children and allow these police officers to remove them from harm's way without losing the ability to catch the bad guy. And that product was called Radar. And to date, Radar has been used in over 400 arrests and convictions. Has 100% conviction rate, and 90% of the people arrested were not only not registered sex offenders, but people with no criminal records of any kind. So having said that, we got an awful lot of media, you could imagine. And we had, over a course of about 90 days of media, about 140,000 mothers that tried to sign up for a product that didn't exist. And so we created the product called My Mobile Watchdog. And, you know, succinctly, what My Mobile Watchdog does is it gives the parents control over every feature on the phone. It allows them to block, filter, monitor, alert all kinds of activity from internet browsing to text messaging, email, you know, the camera, whatever. But most importantly, it has a feature wherein the parents can dial in a level of privacy between known friends and family and the child. And when a stranger or someone they haven't approved enters into the child's life in any way, any form of communication, it sends real-time alerts to the parents with a copy of the communication. So it really is a tool that gives parents a lot of power to prevent strangers from coming into their kids' lives and to monitor or prevent certain types of activity that would be unhealthy or unsafe. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think this is a great product. When I met with you and you suggested to me, and then I thought about it, many young children who have phones take the phones into their bedroom, and some of them take it into their bed with them and use it as an alarm clock or whatever. It is frightening the access that that device gives to a child, for an outsider to have to your child.
Absolutely. And in this event of social networking, where I want you to meet the friends of my friends and the friends of my friends' friends and so forth and so on, it's not uncommon to see a child with 1,000 contacts. And these are not people that the parents have vetted, and they're not people the parents know. And look, our kids are not necessarily bad, but they lack maturity. And I'll give you one example. We had a case where a 12-year-old left his phone home, inadvertently went to the movies. The parents, out of curiosity, decided to look at the phone. And what they saw were a lot of text and pictures from someone they didn't know that were, of course, inappropriate. And the son was texting back, saying, lose my number, I don't know you, leave me alone, over and over again. And this other person kept sending these pictures and sending requests to meet and so forth. So when the 12-year-old got home and the parents said, gosh, you know, it's obvious that you didn't want to participate in this, but we just have this one question. For heaven's sakes, why didn't you come to us? And the child's answer was, I thought you would take my phone. So this is what parents need to realize, is you've given this powerful communication tool and you put it into the hands of a child who's not yet ready to make the kind of tough decisions that they need to make to keep themselves safe. And that's why parents need to intervene.
So I am 100% confident that members in our listening audience, either live today, Bob, or on a future podcast off iTunes or whatever, are going to want to learn more about both eAgency and your Mobile Watchdog products and suite. How do they learn more about both of those?
Well, they can just go to eAgency.com, and eAgency.com has links to My Mobile Watchdog and our corporate product, which is Black Box Mobile, and other things that we do. And they can also reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name is Bob Lotter, L-O-T-T-E-R, and I do get lots of people that reach out to me to ask me questions about security or this issue of children's security. And I'm happy to answer questions and help in any way I can.
Well, I really appreciate bringing these concepts up to the consciousness of our listening audience, and I want to thank you for being a guest on the show, a friend of the show, and to welcome you as our newest member to the Critical Mass for Business community.
Well, I feel honored to be part, and thank you for letting us get the story out, and it was very fun to be part.
Thank you. I appreciate your time. I hope you've enjoyed our show today. I mean, both of the interviews, very different, but very content rich. And if you know of a friend who didn't happen to hear the show today live, tell them about the podcast. They can get it off of anyway, off of the website, off of Critical Mass for Business website, off of Apple iTunes by typing in Critical Mass for Business. There's a whole mess of ways you can do it. You know, we put this show together every week to help you make better business decisions. Today, we also, I think, help the parents out there to make maybe more knowledgeable and informed personal decisions as well. I'd like to thank Smart Business Magazine for sponsoring the show today. Smart Business Magazine is a management journal providing insight and advice for top decision makers. If you'd like to learn more about Smart Business Magazine, visit their website, www.sbnonline.com. Well, this is Rick Franzi saying, till the next show, I hope that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You've been listening to Critical Mass, only on OC Talk Radio, Orange County's only community radio station.